It's a great pleasure for me to be talking to you. It's a place I've never been, you know, Hawaii. And my old band, The Shadows, went there once a long time ago. I wasn't with them at the time, so I missed the opportunity, and I keep saying I've got to go. I visit America all the time, so it would be nothing to just hop, skip, and jump over.
You've achieved something in your life. You're an OBE. What does it mean to you?
Well, it's probably the highest accolade one could have. People have often said to me, in your whole life, what's the best thing that ever happened? And I guess the temptation is to say, well, the best thing that ever happened to me was every single million-selling record I had. But what was never on my radar was an OBE. So for the Queen and the Prime Minister and the public, it comes from the public, really, to consider me worthy of an honor like an OBE was an absolute shock. And the OBE stands for Order of the British Empire. There's an MBE, Member of the British Empire, and there's one above mine, Commander, CBE. For me to have got that was a treat, but when the letter came to tell me that the Prime Minister was going to submit my name to the Queen for a knighthood, oh, that was beyond all my imagination. Well, I mean, I never even imagined it, because it only ever happened to politicians, big businessmen, and the occasional actor.
Do you have any particular memories of that experience?
I'd met the Queen many times before. Originally, my band, The Shadows, and I, because we were the forerunners of rock and roll in Britain, we were of considerable interest to the public, that Brits should be able to do this American rock and roll thing. Whenever there was a Royal Command show, we'd be like the novelty item for the night. But then as the years went on, I got asked back just because I had proved myself in what I did. So I'd met her many, many times. In fact, probably the knighthood was the most scariest thing, because to think of me as a knight was impossible. And I took my three sisters to the palace. I was allowed to take three guests. So I took three sisters. And I found it very emotional, because you are told exactly what to do. There is a stool with a handle on it. They said, do not think you can just go there. We've seen grown men fall down. So I took all the advice, took hold of the handle, knelt. She comes towards you with the sword. Now, this sword must have touched so many incredible shoulders, and it was going to touch mine. She says nothing. You say nothing. You stand up. She puts the Medal of Honor around you, and then she speaks. And the funny thing is, I could hardly talk. It was so emotional for me. I was almost, I didn't weep, but it was close. And she said to me, well, she said, it's been a long time coming. And I sort of went, I said to my sisters afterwards, she probably thought to herself, why are we giving this man this thing? Why didn't we give it to somebody who could at least talk English? So I blew it really that day, but she did actually speak to me. And I thought that was quite an honor in itself, because they said to me, she may not say anything, because the honor is just bestowing that medal on you.
When it comes to the United States, where does that fit in the journey for you?
Well, it's never really fitted in, funnily enough. I always loved it. I feel to myself that I'm partly American. I mean, my whole life has been based on an American art form. I wanted to be a success in the States. And when I first went there, I should have seen the red light, really. I did a show called The Biggest Show of Stars for 1960, and three of us on the show stopped the show each night. People couldn't follow us. And I thought, yes! But of course, I didn't realize, you know, you stopped the show in San Antonio and in the city next door, no one even knows you exist. You need the machinery. And it wasn't for years and years that I discovered that EMI was not interested in my music. And that threw me, because I went many times there. And I've had success there, in that Devil Woman was number four in the Cashbox charts. We Don't Talk Anymore was in the top 10. And there are seven other songs that have been in the top 30. But I have no identity. Somehow or another, I always believed that God plans your life, and that if something doesn't happen, it's probably not meant to be. And you know what I love about it now? I go to America to get away from it all. And I might get spotted by somebody in New York, but they're usually from Europe or somewhere else.
As a final note, you do have a new record that you mentioned to us last night. You previewed, in fact, some of the songs. It's going to be classic rock and roll songs from the original period. Perhaps when it comes out, you may be willing to do a phoner or something.
Oh, yeah, be in touch. You must already know how to get in touch with me, because here we are. But I would love that. I had this idea of doing the iconic rock and roll stuff. As you say, I previewed things like Poetry in Motion, Dream Lover, Rip It Up, It'll Be Me. So I'm going to do about 14 tracks like that in Nashville with a producer called Steve Mandial. He's put together a band for me. We'll do it live. I'll sing it live with them, and hopefully pay respects to these iconic songs that maybe people who are of a certain age listening to us now will say, oh my goodness, I know where I was when Dream Lover came out by Bobby Darin. But I hope they don't rush out and buy his version. I'd rather they buy mine.
It's Sir Cliff Richard, and it is an honor, Sir Cliff, and just means a lot that you would take the time. So thank you so much, the great Sir Cliff Richard. Thank you. I hope this wasn't a hassle for you.
Oh, no, it was no hassle at all. Thank you so much for your interest. I really appreciate it. And for those of you in Hawaii, please wait for me. I'm really thrilled if I can get over and perform.
Awesome. Aloha.
Aloha.